Good afternoon and welcome to the Sitka Nature Show. This is your host, Matt. We're here on the solstice weekend of December 2014, right around the corner from the new year, and certainly the increase in daylight will be welcome. Still been pretty warm this year. Guess we'll see if the official change to winter brings any winter-like weather, but had a little bit of wind in the last couple of weeks and several windy days, but continuing warm weather here in Sitka. It's been an interesting year for birds. The mountain bluebird showed up and has still been around. Northern mockingbird continues. And also there was a purple finch sighted in the neighborhoods near Market Center, which is a first record for Sitka. So it's kind of been a good season for vagrants this year in Sitka. Might be worth getting out and looking around if you're so inclined. And we're headed into Christmas bird count season. It'll be actually 2 weeks from today. The next time I'm on the air will be Christmas bird count day. So I invited our coordinators for the Christmas bird count here, Vicky Vosberg and Jen Cedarleaf, to come and record a conversation with me. I recorded this conversation with them earlier in the week, and I'll get to that in just a moment, but I wanted to give you all the heads up that I'll be giving a slideshow presentation on yard birds of Sitka, kind of birds you can expect to see in your yard in Sitka in the wintertime, and that'll be at the Kettleson Library, which is now on the SJ campus there at the Stratton Library, at 4 p.m. next Sunday, the 28th. Also, on Saturday the 27th at 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at Sitka National Historical Park, there'll be a bird walk looking at the birds of Totem Park. It's another good opportunity to get out and get some experiences. All ages and experience welcome. The pre-count meeting for Christmas bird count will be Thursday the 1st of January, 6 p.m. at the Raptor Center. Please join us there. Jen and Victoria will introduce the bird count and help people get signed up for a route. I'll give a slideshow on the birds that we expect to see in the Sitka area this time of year. So it's a nice opportunity to learn more about the birds, and if you need help, you can often get paired up with somebody with more experience. So turning to the conversation I have for this week, Victoria is a veterinarian. She has her own practice as well as works at the Raptor Center, and Jen works with Jan Straley in the Whale Lab as well as working at the Raptor Center. We'll finish the conversation off talking more about the bird count, but I wanted to start off here with our conversation about some of their experiences, many experiences with birds at the Raptor Center.
I guess the exciting news at the Raptor Center for bird type people is the brown booby that was here in the fall. So Jen, you have this emergency bat line, except for it's the bird line.
Bird line, yes.
And people call you and you're on call to go pick up birds.
Mm-hmm.
24 hours a day.
Yep.
And so you got the call for, what? You didn't believe them though. They told you what, did they know what it was?
They didn't really know what it was. He said, I have this really strange seabird on the boat, and this was at like 9 o'clock at night, and I thought, I wonder, and I asked him, I said, is it an albatross? And he goes, no, it's not an albatross. It's brown. It's got these big yellow feet. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, I bet it's an albatross. You know, and a lot of times we get these calls and I'm like, I don't know what it's going to be. You know, they tell you it's one thing and you get there and you're like, oh, well, that's a storm petrel. But this time he's like, it's got these big yellow feet. And I'm thinking, what has big yellow feet? And he said, I think it's some kind of booby. And I thought, okay, this guy's nuts. But okay. And so I woke up. One of the employees at the Raptor Center was living with me at the time. And we ran down to Eliason and picked up this bird, and it had its head tucked behind its wing, so I couldn't see its head. All I could see was brown and white. It had a white chest with this brown line across it and these big yellow feet, and I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And we picked it up. Maggie picked it up, and she, it started making all these weird noises that I'd never heard before, and I didn't want to disturb it or anything until we got back to the center, so I didn't even try to figure out what it was till we got there, and it was a brown booby.
And so, just so people know, brown boobies, normal range, they're actually considered rare in the U.S. because they're more south than that. I guess there's a population in Hawaii, but in North America, it's primarily Mexico with occasional vagrants into California. So this is a little bit far north of their typical
just
range.
Just a little.
Yeah. Unexpected, to say the least. And I guess the question then is where did it come from? So you might actually get to list this if they decide that it is valid. So for people that care about bird lists,
yeah.
Your bird has to get accepted by the state committee on that is responsible for the official checklist. And so the thing that for a bird like this, there's two things that can be problems. It's human assisted or it's released from somewhere. So if it's an escaped bird, for example, a lot of waterfowl get kept in captivity, and if one escapes, then it can join in with wild birds. And there was a demoiselle crane that was seen in Gustavus a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And it was determined to not be. Well, they couldn't. They weren't sure that it was not an escaped bird, so they didn't end up including it on the list. But it was probably the same one that had been seen in California earlier, and it was migrating north with sandhill cranes. So they'll just join in with other birds. And so over the years, there's been, you know, around North America, several interesting, you know, Asian birds that are kept in captivity at least sometimes, and so they don't know, you know, where they came from. But in this case, the other thought would be is that maybe it just hopped on a ship and was hanging out on the ship, and then at some point jumped off the ship and said, I don't know where I am. It was a little interesting because you sent pictures and I posted those on my weblog, and ended up seeing getting forwarded some photos of a brown booby flying. I think it was about 500 miles west of here, west of where this one would have been picked up closer to Kodiak. But it would have been the day before that it brought in. So I don't know what kind of range those guys have. If it's plausible that it was the same bird that flew across the Gulf of Alaska and then was picked
up on
this.
Well, based on the condition this bird was in, I kind of doubt it. It was pretty weak.
Yeah. So then that would imply that there were two birds, two brown boobies in the Gulf of Alaska around the same time, which seems...
And she, I almost think that she was attacked by an eagle or something. Mm-hmm. Something was trying to predate on her because she had some wounds on her head and neck and... And otherwise, she was really skinny. She was really, really thin. And, yeah, I don't know that she could have... I mean, I don't know. With the wind currents over the water and stuff...
Yeah.
Who knows how fast she could have gotten over here. But when we picked her up, she was pretty, pretty tired and pretty sick.
So, and I guess in general, you guys get calls for birds all the time. And there's some restrictions on what you're allowed to treat there. As long as it's a wild bird, it's okay.
It needs to be a wild bird.
Mm-hmm.
But it also needs to be an indigenous bird.
Okay.
So things like pigeons, starlings, and now the Eurasian collared dove.
Yeah.
We cannot treat them, and we're required to euthanize them.
Oh, okay. So if somebody even brings them in at all, you actually have to euthanize them.
We do. Yeah.
Interesting. You can't just let them go again.
No, we can't.
Okay. So if somebody wants to treat not have those get euthanized, then they shouldn't bring those ones in.
Right. That's correct. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
They have to figure out how to take care of them on their own.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand why the laws are that way. They're trying to protect against invasive species.
Yeah.
I don't know how much good it's doing based on the Eurasian collared dove population explosion.
Yes, there seems to be a lot of those around. I noticed 11 in the tree outside of my house, and I've heard, I think you mentioned to me one of your clients.
One of my clients, yeah. 26, I think she counted
in her
one
yard.
Day. In her yard.
Oh my goodness.
And I heard somebody else, I guess, that secondhand I heard about, somebody that lives by Cascade Creek, had over 40 that she liked to feed them. And had over 40 in the trees around. So they're definitely around, and some people like them better than others. They make an interesting cooing sound, almost a little reminiscent of an owl, but some people really don't like them.
Well, I've had so many people tell me, I heard an owl, and I heard it in the middle of the day. And I think about it, and I always forget these Eurasian collared doves are around, and I'll think about it for like 2 days, and then I'm like, oh, I bet it's one of those doves.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
the doves are, once you get used to them, then you're like, oh, you know immediately what they are. But if you've never heard them before, they do sound very much like an owl.
Mm-hmm. Your typical hoo-hoo owl.
Yeah, yeah.
Which no owl really makes that sound.
Yeah, I wonder where that comes from. But so the Raptor Center is known, I mean, it's the Raptor Center. And so I always thought under the impression that it had to be raptors that you took care of. But I learned more recently that, so you guys take care of little songbirds and mm-hmm. water birds. Storm petrels was one that I remember talking to you about before that's always interesting. Did you get a bunch of storm petrels in this fall again?
Every fall we get a few, yeah.
They started a little earlier this year than they normally do, like end of August, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look for sure, but yeah.
And these are just stranded birds that are otherwise okay?
I'm a little suspicious that they're birds of the year off of St. Louis area.
Yeah.
Because they come in about the time that they should be fledging and that they just don't know how to weather the big storms.
Yeah.
And they end up here.
And so is the kind of the most common scenario, somebody just finds them in their driveway sort of thing? And
they're usually found on the ground. They're not able to take off from hard cement like that. It's very difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
Out at St. Louis area, they're often on an incline, and so they kind of do this little scoot to take off. But
well, I notice when I see them flying in the water, it seems like they just like jump right up, but maybe there's a little bit of a paddle action that happens.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Brooke Schaefer on the show earlier this fall, and she found one I think they had it in her bathtub, and then they took it out to the harbor mm-hmm. the next day. And I said, got to be careful. I think Jen and Vicky told me that the crows will come get them if you release them during the day.
Yeah. So we always let them go right at dusk when it's starting to get dark. Mm-hmm. And I try to take them places where I know there's not a lot of birds around, or if I take it to Back Beach or Eagle Beach, whatever we're calling that these days.
Yeah.
If there's like a lot of gulls around, then I'll take it somewhere else
Sadly, we're speaking from experience.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, they seem to be a little bit oblivious, I guess, in my experience. I don't know. I mean, they get blown in sometimes in the fall, and so you see them out. And I've only seen the forktail storm petrels out on the water, but you guys get both leeches and mm-hmm. forktails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So something's, that's still a mystery to me. I'm not sure where the leeches are going during the day, that they're not seen on the water. But
yeah.
they're mm-hmm. getting stranded at similar rates, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
One time, they were just right out in front of Crescent Harbor, just off the breakwater, and an eagle flew over and grabbed one. And all of the other four that were there were just kind of doing their thing. And then, like, about the time the eagle landed on the piling, they were like, oh, what? And they all flew. And I was like, okay, you guys, not so aware there. Whether that's because they're young birds.
That makes sense that they would be young birds and just kind of clueless.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that could be.
When I lived on St. Louis area, the eagles would hunt the storm petrels at night.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's when they would come in to their nests. Their nest burrows mm-hmm. was at night. And we'd hike out to check the burrows in the morning, and we'd see all these little piles of feathers left by the eagles that had been hunting them at night. I think that was kind of a unique situation.
Yeah, I don't know how, I see herons flying at night and stuff, and, you know, you hear about owls, you know, you expect owls to be night birds, but it seems like a lot of birds actually must have pretty good night vision. A lot of birds are migrating at night. I don't know how much they're using sight at that time, but, it's kind of interesting. Were there owls out on those area, too, that might have been?
You know, I never saw or heard an owl. There was a nesting peregrine falcon
mm-hmm.
and two nesting bald eagles out there.
Okay.
But never saw any owls.
Interesting. How long did you work out there? Did you spend a couple summers out there? Or?
I spent one full summer and I think two partial summers where I helped kind of get them off the island and do the ending surveys.
And that was part of that. I guess it's been going for 20 years maybe now, or close to 20 years with Leslie Slater.
Mm-hmm.
Is she still doing that?
She's mm-hmm. still in charge of it, yeah.
Yeah. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. I guess they're doing it. It's not just Liz area, but around the Maritime.
Yeah, it's all part of the Maritime, that's called.
Alaska Maritime.
National Wildlife Refuge.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so there's several islands mm-hmm. throughout the coastal area. Which I guess is where the islands would be. So, what other sort of interesting birds do you guys get in? I mean, the brown booby. Well, I guess we should finish the story about the brown booby. So it was injured, looked like maybe it had been attacked, and mm-hmm. very weak. As I recall, you said it was under a kilogram, so maybe 990 grams or something like that.
Yeah, 990 some.
Yeah.
95 maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well under typical weight for those guys. And they are coastal birds. They eat, I mean, if you haven't seen one before, if you've ever seen a picture of a gannet, that's the same, they're relatives. They're kind of a long necked, long bill, sharp kind of bill. I guess they fly up and then they just dive down into the water to grab fish.
And the coolest thing for me about them, this was the first booby I'd ever seen, and I was really surprised they have that like flap of skin under their beak, the pelicans.
Oh, they have a little
pouch. It's not a huge pouch like a pelican, but it's skin that definitely moves. And the things that bird, I mean, she swallowed some big herring that we gave her. It was pretty impressive. And that she could eat so many herring at one time.
So they just would eat, like, just head first kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes tail first.
Yeah.
You know, she would grab it and then flip it around the way she wanted it to swallow it. And sometimes it was, most of the time, head first. But sometimes it was tail first, which I thought was very weird. But
and so she ate a lot then.
Mm-hmm.
And seemed to be doing relatively well. And you guys aren't really set up to care for tropical water birds so much.
Yeah, and it sounded like, so we ended up sending her down to the International Bird Rescue south of L.A., and they are mostly an organization. They do a lot of oil spill response, but they do a lot of water birds, and so we wanted to send her down somewhere where they knew how to take care of her. There was talk about sending her to the Sea Life Center, but then the Sea Life Center would have had to turn around and send her down to California eventually anyway to get, you know, to release her. So,
and she was okay out of the water. Some of the seabirds have to be in water.
Oh, okay.
So we would have had to move her much sooner if she needed to be in the water all the time. But she was, you know, like a gull. She was able to stand.
Yeah.
And when I talked to the woman down at International Bird Rescue, she said, you know, a lot of times when we have boobies in, they sit on the edge of the pool and they'll go in the water and they'll chase the cormorants and the pelicans around. And then they like to sit on the edge of the water. They're not in the water all the time. Yeah. So, which is funny because they have those huge webbed feet. You would think, oh, this bird's in the water all the time. But she wasn't really. She liked to, we gave her a big tree branch. She liked to perch on a tree branch, and she had these, like mesh, well, they were PVC covered with netting,
right? Yeah.
To kind of relieve pressure for water birds when we get them in off of their chest, because they're used to sitting on water, so they don't have pressure on their chest a lot. And so we use the netting to kind of act like water. And she would sit on that sometimes, and she was pretty cool. Pretty cool to have around.
So, and you, I think you only had her there for about 2 or 3 weeks, is that?
Maybe how long? 3 weeks.
Yeah, maybe 3 weeks.
And we're able to get her sent down to California. Mm-hmm. So they sent back a couple of pictures, which you shared, and I was able to post on my web blog if people are interested in seeing. And I guess you haven't heard yet, but it sounded like she was doing, like those wounds were healing up.
And when they got her down there, because we had her in such a, you know, in the ICU area, we had her in a small space where there wasn't really a lot of room to walk around, but when they got her down there, she emailed me and asked about her leg. I guess she had a limp or something.
Oh, okay.
And we had never noticed a limp.
Yeah.
But it's cleared up and everything's fine. So I'm wondering if that was part of the, you know, predation incident that she got away from.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was, I mean, it's kind of an interesting, it's for me interesting to speculate where it came from. You know, there was a big sort of, some people called it the blob of warm water in the Gulf of Alaska. Mm-hmm. Sort of, I guess what it was caused by is a lack of storms last year didn't churn up the water, and so the surface water mostly stayed there, and so there's kind of warmer than usual. Plus, then we had a pretty warm year this year, and earlier this fall, somebody said that the, even in the Sound here, was 6 degrees warmer than normal for the time of year, or something like that. There's the buoy out there, you know, the Edgecombe buoy. I thought, well, it has water temperature data, so I might go back and look and see what normals is compared to this year. But it is kind of interesting, you know, just maybe it hopped, maybe both of those boobies, if there were two, hopped aboard a ship and decided to abandon. Because I guess what happens is the Great Circle Route actually takes you up through the Gulf of Alaska if you're going between Asia and, say, Seattle, you know. you actually end up going up kind of in the southern Gulf of Alaska and around the Aleutians. You wouldn't, like, it's easy to think if you just look at a flat map, you'd just go straight, you know, straight west, but turns out that you actually want to go northwest. So it's not implausible, certainly, and I guess there had been a couple other reports of boobies that were closely enough associated with ships, I guess, that they figured that they were all both ship assisted. So I guess time will tell what they decide on this one. But
long time ago, we had a brown pelican.
Oh yeah,
and we knew that one came up on a ship. We were told. Yeah. So it definitely happened.
Yeah, it's just interesting. You know, birds get moved around. In some cases, you know, like pigeons here were introduced here, and they seem to be doing very well. But others that were introduced in the continent, like the collared doves that you mentioned and the starlings, got to Sitka on their own. But even that, the collared doves were seen in southeast Alaska for a couple of years before they were considered naturally occurring, because they weren't sure whether somebody had been keeping them and they got released. I guess, you know, your bulk of your birds there that you keep long-term are raptors there at the Raptor Center. Mm-hmm. Do you have a few ravens that are kind of long-term also?
Yeah, we've got a couple, yeah.
Do they seem, was it you that was telling me at one point, like the ravens in the cage will trade food for other things?
Yeah, it's amazing how every raven we've had has had a free friend, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I did hear they were telling me the other day that our raven Onyx that we have was, he was hiding food like behind one of the posts in his cage, and then he would go away from it and wait for the wild raven to come over. And when the wild ravens came over, then he would like attack them through the netting. And I don't know if he was doing that on purpose, just trying to get them to come over so he could interact with them or beat them up, or I don't know. But
so
it
he
was
put
hilarious.
The food where they could find it, and then he would.
Then he would like wait for them to come over, and then he'd like scare them away or attack them. I don't know what he was doing, but it's those guys are so much fun to watch.
You know, the ravens are so smart, and yet they're really challenging in captivity in rehab. You'd think a bird that was that smart would eat.
Yeah.
And we have a really tough time getting them to eat in captivity.
And fly in captivity.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll run if you try to get them to fly. So, you know, one thing we've learned is bald eagles we can hold for a long time until release is optimal, like say around the herring spawn rather than the middle of winter. But ravens, we get them out as soon as we can because they have the help of their family, and sometimes we will try to take them to the part of Sitka where they were originally found so they can rejoin their family. And they're scavengers, and I think they'll do better in the wild than in our hospital.
So they don't like being kept, basically.
No, not at all.
They're difficult.
Yeah.
Eagles, they're in for a free meal. They're up for that.
Just keep feeding me.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. And do you get owls very often?
In the fall.
In the fall, usually, but this year we had a lot. It seems like we had a lot of owls. I think we've had like 4 western screech owls.
Are the owls mostly immature birds then, if you're getting them in the fall, that
probably
are just not
fledging.
They're not very good at finding their food kind of thing?
I think so,
speaking of young birds, how we were talking about the storm petrels, and Victoria feeds a lot of birds at her house, and she was telling me, was it last year, about the young pine siskins and how dumb they are? Like, we just can't, you know, the more time you spend around birds, and I suppose it's this way for animals in general, the young ones are just, you know, there's that learning curve, and they're just not all there.
Yeah, and you don't really think about it with wildlife. You think they're born knowing how to take care of themselves, but just like people, they have got to learn, and it's been fun at my feeder watching how dumb some of those pine siskins were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, you know, listening to somebody talk about like the bird language stuff essentially, you know, an accipiter, your Cooper's hawk or here sharpshin hawk or northern goshawk is kind of like the serial killer of the bird world, you know. Like everybody's terrified of those guys because they just go, and they're feeding their young. So, I mean, from their perspective, it's all they need to feed their young. And so they time, I guess many birds time their, or these raptors time their nesting so that so that they'll be feeding when there's all these young dumb birds around, basically. And the immature birds, they just get out of the nest and they're just like, feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me. And they're, you know, as one of their siblings gets picked off, they're still like, they don't. And it's the one that figures it out, you know, that survives.
Yeah.
But it there's a certain amount of obliviousness there, which you see then in the summer and late summer. And depending, you know, different songbirds nest at different times. But it is kind of interesting. And I guess it's, you know, when you see adults, they're the ones that were, you know, quick enough, I guess, to figure it out and not get eaten in the meantime. But, yeah, I just see the big flocks. Did you have some siskins that nested kind of in your area, presumably?
I don't think so, because they disappeared for months, mm-hmm. and now they're back.
You have some again. Back again?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I had a whole tree full the other day.
Yeah.
There.
I saw a pine siskin nest, not this year, but last year at in the pine trees, you know, it's kind of short pine trees there at Crescent Harbor, just at the corner closest to town. There's a little landscape in there, and mm-hmm. there was actually a pine siskin nest in there. Hmm. And it was interesting because you always see pine siskins in these big flocks and stuff, mm-hmm. but there was just always just one bird that was, I mean, it was kind of, so maybe they don't nest communally. They like separate from their flocks to nest, maybe. I don't know.
I think they showed up at my place, was it probably late summer, must have been. And, you know, I'd see all these puffed up little babies just sitting there asking for food from their parents. And they seemed to be the ones who ran into the windows a lot more.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to talk about young birds. You know, like I think crows nest fairly early and they're fledged by maybe midsummer. And I've seen in the fall for sure at Halibut Point Rec, obvious, like looking full grown to me, couldn't tell, but they were obviously begging. They were like, the food was right there, and they were like, no, that's not good enough.
Someone
give it
needs to
me.
Pick it up and put it in my mouth.
Yeah. And I was like, man, what is ravens? I haven't noticed doing that, but they may be doing the same thing. Sometimes you see the ravens around with that. I guess their mouths are pink maybe mm-hmm. when they're young.
Yeah.
And so you can tell them.
Yeah, the crows and ravens are harder because they stick with their parents for so much longer, their family groups. So they're, I mean, I think they beg a lot longer than the other birds do because they can.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose.
I mean, if I had somebody put food in my mouth, I guess I'd probably beg too.
Bending over for this salmon is too much work. Yeah, it was kind of funny. Well, then this last winter in February, I was at Magic Island at Halibut Point Rec, and there was a first-year gull there, and there was an adult gull there. And the first-year gull was kind of picking on one of the, you know, sun stars. It was a small, and they'll eat, there's like just picking the legs off of it and stuff. But then it was doing what, I mean, as best I could tell, it was just begging from the adult. And I thought, well, that's weird, because I never think of gulls as hanging together. I mean, they're just in these random flocks, it seems like. But I thought, this bird really seemed to be begging from the adult, And so I started looking around, and apparently gulls actually, you know, stick around with parents a little longer. I mean, I guess it's just hard to tell because maybe it's a little more fluid. They're not so tightly grouped as it's obvious with the crows and ravens. But yeah, apparently gulls will have some, at least in some cases, will take care of young throughout a winter. And, you know, I guess from a survival standpoint, that first year is the highest mortality. I mean, mm-hmm. Many of the birds die that first year, don't mm-hmm. make it.
We'll see that begging behavior in our main flight. Mm-hmm. We put the baby eagles in there, and they'll just beg from anybody that goes by. They'll be begging from
them. And all the adults, like, I always like to, like, narrate it. It's like, oh, you're not mine. What are you talking to me for? And the adults, like, go as far away as they can, and the babies just sit there and scream and scream.
Is there any that ever kind of shows some parental instinct and feeds the babies?
I've never noticed any.
I haven't either.
Mm-mm.
Of course, the ones we're putting in there are perfectly capable of feeding themselves.
Yeah.
And that might be part of it, too. We've never put a bird in there.
Well, we had those ones this year, those really little ones.
That's true. Yeah,
and the adults just like, nope.
Not ours.
You're not mine.
Yeah.
I think they have to be, you know, in the right mood.
Yeah. So mostly you're getting full-grown eagles that have some sort of, like, ran into something or got mm-hmm. sick. And I guess in the wintertime, you get most of your birds in the winter, your eagles? Is that when they mostly show up, or is it kind of just random?
They'll start showing up around January or February, mm-hmm. which kind of corresponds with they ran out of food from the salmon spawning, and now they're getting hungry and getting desperate and maybe taking more risks.
Yeah.
Each year is different. You know, we've had January be the big year, and then we've also had May be the big year.
Yeah.
Big month, sorry. But things kind of pick up around January, and then they start slowing down around the end of July.
Mm-hmm. And by then, everybody's
And then in August, we get the babies in.
Yeah.
So the young birds that run into trouble come in August. That's just when they're fledging, generally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when they're fledging, and they, you know, most of the time they're thin. And we have a board in the clinic where we list who's in main flight and what the problem is. And usually, I hate to say this, but when the babies come in, they're listed as dumb babies because they just don't know.
They haven't figured out how to find
their
own
food. Yeah, they don't know what they're doing yet. And so, I don't know, I almost feel like, so when we have a baby, we get a baby in, say we get it in August, our rule is kind of we won't release that bird until herring.
Right.
Because then it stays with us all winter, and it's kind of pointless for us to do rehab and put a bird back out there when there's nothing to eat.
Right.
You know, it's going to end up back with us, or it's not going to make it. So we hold all the birds that we have. I think, when is our last release, like October, beginning of October maybe?
Yeah, kind of depends on the salmon
right.
running.
Yeah.
But we release adult birds pretty much up until the end of the salmon run.
Yeah.
We used to release those babies, and then we thought about it and decided, let's just give them an extra chance.
Yeah.
And so we do keep them in main flight, so they've socialized a little bit with the other eagles. Obviously, they're not learning to hunt, but they're learning to interact and potentially steal food from other eagles. And so they'll get released in the spring when there's a better chance.
Well, eagles seem to be all about stealing food, in my impression. That, like, they're not very graceful flyers in the forest, I have to say, but they will chase each other through the forest and then crash, crash, crash. And
they put more effort into stealing food from another eagle than actually going and getting food, from what I've seen.
And
when I was up in Haines, you know, that late salmon run, mm-hmm. there's salmon everywhere, and there's eagles fighting over one salmon, and there's salmon
everywhere. I know they're just funny.
It seems like a strange sort of approach to things, but I, you know, a lot of times you just find a hunk of fish head or, you know, body of something in the forest, and like, oh, well, I guess the eagles were by, and, you know, mm-hmm. they'll drop it, and then they don't find it again. So it seems like it's a little bit of a waste. You know, a couple years ago when we had all those MERS in, I guess it's probably been 3 or 4 years ago now, they were sick. You know, they were showing up. I think you saw one on Main, or somebody saw one on, like, Lincoln Street or something.
Yeah, we picked one up from, like, right out in front of the Westmark.
Yeah, kind of like bizarre that they were there, and then there was one just hanging around in Crescent Harbor, and there was some that washed up dead, and the eagles were getting them. I got some pictures of an eagle flying over, mm-hmm. and there were several feather piles in the forest, but it was interesting. I mean, the eagles seemed to be pretty opportunistic, but focused on theft rather than actual. I wonder if there's some that are just good at hunting and everybody else tries to kind of take from them, sort of thing, but
who knows?
Yeah, it is kind of an interesting thing. So, do you band them when they're there?
Mm-hmm. When they're
when
you guys, yeah,
yeah. So when they're in our care, they wear a colored band so we can tell who they are. Then when they're released, the colored band is removed, and a Fish and Wildlife silver band with a number on it is put on them.
And so, do you ever get them back or find out what happens to them later?
We have. Mm-hmm. Over the years, we've had various birds back, and some of them have been years later.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to know that, yes, we were successful.
Yeah. I mean, that's the nice thing about bands is you can actually tell what they are. You know, that or the unique plumage, which it'd be interesting to see if it shows up again this coming year. But the eagle with white primaries, so it's mm-hmm. basically white wingtips, mm-hmm. and it's got some other kind of odd coloration, you know, unusual pale coloration.
And white talons.
White talons, that's right. And I had, you know, I got a little curious about it. I saw it flying over my house last spring, and I was kind of curious about it, and went back to the email list archives for Sitka Birds List, and and realized that I thought I hadn't seen it before. I remembered people talking about it, but it turned out I'd actually seen it when it was still immature. Mm-hmm. And it just looked it looked different at the time, but it didn't occur to me, you know, in subsequent years as people talked about this white-winged eagle, because I just sat sitting there and you couldn't
quite
see it.
It's hard to tell when
it's sitting,
yeah.
But its face was already white.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't...
And its beak, like half of its beak, I think, was yellow. The top was yellow and the bottom was still black or something. It was... beautiful bird.
Yeah.
When it was young. And still a beautiful bird.
Right. And it's, you know, it's very striking. You see it flying overhead and it's got the white wingtips and so forth. And so that's another one that I think did somebody say that they'd seen it in Juneau or something? Did you hear about?
I know it's been seen up in Haines.
Oh, in Haines. Okay. Yeah.
So I think basically it's winters in Haines and summers in Sitka.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one to keep an eye out for. But it's fun to be able to kind of track these birds and, you know, in the absence of having, some sort of radio transmitters, which incidentally, you guys might be interested in this. I saw they had the snowy owl explosion in the east last year. So what they did is they called it Project Snowstorm, and they tagged snowy owls with geolocators, solar powered, so they would continue working hooked into cell network. So they would download the data automatically over a cell network. Mm. Of course, there's not much cell network in the northern barrens, you know,
that's true.
In the summer. And so, so they got this data all last winter. And then this fall, again, one of them showed up and like had these massive data dumps of where it had been all summer. And had been in, I didn't realize at the time that I hadn't really thought about it, but Quebec goes way up to on the east side of Hudson Bay, goes up there into the tundra country, and I guess that's when that one hung out, but they were able to then see where the eagle had spent all summer, and it had come back south again into the into the cell range network. So I don't know, Southeast Alaska is probably not an optimal place for that sort of tagging, but it is kind of fun when you get those little glimpses into the movements of these birds that are going around and so forth. So
speaking of the transmitters and stuff, this year during Whale Fest, it was all about gizmos and gadgets, and I can't remember who found it, but somebody found, I believe it was one of the backpacks that was put on the eagles.
Oh, yeah.
Over at the airport for that study, and they just found it washed up on the shore, and so they brought it into us during Whale Fest, and Steve Lewis, Steve W. Lewis, who works with me with whale stuff, was going to send it to Steve Lewis, who's the one that banded the birds on the airport.
Yeah.
So talk about confusing, but that was kind of cool that someone found this backpack when...
Yeah, it'd be interesting I don't know if you'll be able to get any of the data out of it or if it's... Because that was when they were doing the EIS study for the runway expansion? Or
this was
that?
Right after the airplane hit the eagle.
Oh, okay.
That they decided to do all these studies on eagles over there, and so I can't remember how many birds Steve put backpacks on, but I think it was about 5 or 6, I want to say. And so, he also put like green or blue tags on their wings. I can't remember what color. I think they were blue, but they look green, or I don't know. But so I know there's still, occasionally I'll see that someone up in Anchorage saw a bird with wing tags, and I know in Juneau they've seen birds with wing tags, and so I'm sure that there's other projects going on.
Yeah.
Probably not all the birds from the Sitka one, but
yeah.
A couple of years ago, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago now, we got a call about a dead eagle over by, I don't know where, you know the island with the houses off the bridge, right off the bridge, it's got the two houses on it, DeGroff. Or no.
Oh, this little tiny island here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that little green strip that goes up alongside the bridge there. Somebody had found a dead eagle there, and so they called us, and we went and picked it up, and it had a backpack on. It had two tags on its legs. One was a Fish and Wildlife band, and one was something else, and like a colored band or something. And it turns out the eagle was banded in British Columbia in the early 90s. And it had a backpack on still, and it was not a satellite one. It was like a one you would use an antenna for.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but, I mean, it was like the early 90s, and this was just a couple of years ago we picked it up. So, and those things are supposed to come off, but I think that the strapping that they used for this particular backpack just didn't wear out or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So we've still got that one at the Raptor Center. It's pretty cool.
Well, it's nice. So the birds, I guess this is suggesting that eagles live for quite a while. I guess once they figure out how to eat or be effective thieves or catch their own food. And some winter, I mean, I remember it was 2007, I think, when we had just a ton of snow. And there was, you guys,
that was a horrible year.
You had a ton of eagles come in dead. I mean, and I remember seeing half a dozen of them just between the Science Center and the park, you know, just along the beach.
It wasn't just the snow, it was the ice. Mm. You know, I think it rained and then it froze. And people were describing eagles that actually just fell out of the tree in front of them. And I think it was that icing up that was really the problem for these guys.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember even the next summer finding eagle carcasses in the woods and stuff.
I was just looking at the records the other day, and that year, in the month of February, we picked up one or two birds every single day that month.
Wow.
And then when the snow started melting, I remember getting a call from the park that these, I mean, they were just eagles melting out of the snow in the park because they had died and then been buried by more snow. And so I think one day we went over there and picked up like six birds or something.
Wow. And I think that was that same winter that there was an eagle at Halibut Point Rec that had decided that other eagles were fair game and was
I think it was at Stargavin.
Was it Stargavin?
Yeah, it was eating other eagles.
It was eating other eagles.
Yeah. That was a bad, I mean, I remember there were no deer carcasses that year. It was like the previous winter had been bad for the deer.
Yeah. And there was so much snow, I think, probably if they made it till but the snow didn't melt until really late. I mean, that was part of the problem, I guess.
That was, so I think we had in like 145, 146 eagles that year, which is the most we'd ever gotten in, but, you know, 50% of them were dead on arrival, so. That was a bad year. We had a lot of cold birds and a lot of hungry birds, and thank goodness we get fish donated because I don't know what we'd have done that year. Feed them all.
So so the Raptor Center takes fish donations if people want, if they have old fish. You don't want freezer burned fish, but if you have fish that
do you take freezer burned? Yeah. In fact, it almost has to be because it's wanton waste. If you're giving us fish that could be consumed by a person.
Right, okay. So your old bad fish from your freezer, you guys are willing to take, or carcasses, or...
Yeah, we get, people bring us deer carcasses, and then a lot of times if a bear has to get shot, we'll get that carcass. So bear meat, deer meat is always good. Somebody brought us a sea otter carcass yesterday. Hmm. Which I'm not sure if the birds are going to eat, but we'll see.
Yeah, they get a little picky when they have all that free food.
Yes, they do.
So, the other thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, as it is the season, is Christmas bird count. So you guys are how many years you've been doing it now? I was trying to remember.
You ask us every year.
We can't remember. Has it been 10, do you think?
I think this is my 10th, and I don't think you did it the first year. Or two, because I think Susan Bronlund did it one year.
It's been about eight.
Maybe 2 years. So I think, this sounds like maybe this is your eighth year.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. But it's been several years that you've been doing it. So it's, I'm sure, down to a science for you right now, right?
Sure.
Pretty much. Yes.
You have your maps and your
this is where you go.
Break out the thing. So it's going to be the 4th of January, which is pretty much the tail.
I think it's like almost the last day you can do it.
Yeah.
It's and so for folks that don't know, the Christmas bird count season, it's already started. Some people had their counts last week.
Yeah,
it's,
I think, kind of Anchorage for sure did.
Like a month between kind of the second week of December, maybe, and the first week of January.
Yeah, so it's December 14th through January 5th, so about 3 week period.
3 weeks,
yeah.
And so your count has to occur sometime in that period. Count circles are established at some point in Sitka's case in the mid 70s, I think 75 or 73, somewhere in there. And it's been run here. I think there was a couple of years that it wasn't run, early 80s, 81, 80, kind of there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's been run here. Last year, I guess we had the highest participation in Southeast anyway. We had 52 people.
We had a lot of people last year. It was wonderful.
Yeah. And it's a nice opportunity, you know, to get out. I know folks, like, you get all levels. You get people that are kind of bird nerdy types, and then you get people that are like, I know it's a bird. And so, yeah, I think that's a bird. So it's, you know, you get a mix, and it's a nice opportunity. We're not a super social birding group here and in Sitka for whatever reasons, but this is one of those opportunities that we have where a lot of people come. So Thursday night, the 1st, which in the evening,
Is it at six?
Yeah, six is what you guys sent in the email.
Okay. See how organized we are?
6 o'clock at the Raptor Center.
Yes.
And I'll do a blitz through the birds that you might see, I guess we could say. Mm-hmm. It's always a little hard because everybody wants to see something different because different people know different things or are likely to see different things because it depends on where you're going. So I try to rush through everything fairly quickly, but sometimes people have questions about things. Last year, I think we had 6 Anna's hummingbirds on the Christmas bird count, and we'll probably, from what I'm hearing, get like similar numbers this year. There's a bunch of people having Anna's hummingbirds around. It's so hard to know, you know, how far they're traveling. They can travel several miles between feeders. But I just talked to somebody this week that has a friend is out at Solar's Trailer Court, has hummingbirds coming out there, and that's the first ones. I'm not surprised, but I hadn't actually heard of anybody out that end getting them at feeders. But Glenken Island, the kind of downtown neighborhoods,
Wolf Drive
to Anna's Drive, yeah. And I kind of suspect maybe those are one set. What I've been thinking is maybe those are one set, the Glenken Islands are one set, the sort of Swan Lake ones are one set, and then maybe these other ones out the road are another set. So it's interesting to kind of track that. But that, I guess, is one of the advantages to bird count is it's been going on for, well, do you remember off the top of your head? I don't, like 100 plus years, right?
Oh, yes. This is the 115th.
This 115th.
Yeah.
And so it started back east
1900
somewhere.
1900 in the northeast.
Northeast.
Yeah. Has anyone seen the bluebird lately? That would be fun to get on.
Yeah, it would be. It would be an interesting. I have not seen it since last week. I have not been looking. I talked to somebody yesterday that had been out there and hadn't seen it.
Has anyone seen it since it was really windy?
No, not that I know of. Yeah. So I might go out and look this week. But yeah, if it sticks around, and that's the other one that's been around and I haven't heard of lately is the northern mockingbird.
So
I hadn't realized this until I saw an old web blog post that I did, and it said, oh, there was a northern mockingbird on a prior count. So apparently we've had a northern mockingbird before.
Well, and I'm probably not the last one that's seen the mockingbird, but I saw it on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I need to talk to the person whose yard it's been frequenting and see if it's still around. Certainly, if anybody has unusual birds that have been hanging in their yard around their feeders, it's always nice to know for the count. But other than that, it's like canvas the area. And, of course, we just have this tiny little strip of stuff that we actually cover along the roads.
A lot of our territory is up in the mountains and out on the water. So
yeah,
it seems like every year we get the water covered.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty decently.
Depending on weather.
And then we don't get even, what would you say, maybe a quarter of our actual area?
Yeah.
Do we even get that much?
If the water gets covered, that's like half.
Yeah.
But that's still pretty spotty coverage.
Yeah. But it goes all of Indian River Valley, essentially, a little bit into the South Kalyan Valley.
So if anybody feels like going for a hike.
Yeah, I've done that. In the past years, I haven't done it in the last few years, but I've gone up Verstovia and come back down. And,
oh, right. And it seems like you don't get very much.
Hardly any birds.
You don't see many species, but you could get ptarmigan if you're, right. Like, there are definitely ptarmigan around, but there are very few counts that have recorded ptarmigan. Another bird that is around all the time, but hardly ever gets counted is screech owls.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's got to go out at night and listen for them, basically. But we know they're around.
Mm-hmm.
So there are definitely species that are just underreported for that. And it's hard to... I'm sure there are undercounts of many other things. Like, it seems like our most common bird... One of our most common birds is the ravens, actually. It seems like hundreds of those every year. And juncos. And then some years, the pine siskins. I think you guys did the park one year when there was like... thousand pine siskins or something?
No, that wasn't the park. It was like one of the neighborhoods.
Oh, was it?
No, it was one of the little neighborhoods, like, I want to say, back by Fearson and Monastery and up that end. And, oh, my gosh. We turned around this one time, and there were, like, pine siskins everywhere.
So counts are supposed to be super precise, right? We want no error whatsoever. And actually, you know, I just kind of like, well, that looks like about 100.
Yeah, 100.
If you
Yeah, the big flocks are hard. I actually practice my estimating because, you know, if you don't do a lot of estimating by looking at things, you think, oh, that looks like about 50.
Yeah.
And it could be like 150, but... So I'll, like, look at a big flock of birds and say, oh, maybe that's 75, and then I'll try to do the best I can counting them. And I've actually gotten better at estimating because of that, but it's huge, big flocks of birds. It's so hard.
Yeah, so opportunities to do that here are with your gulls and, and ducks and, like, geese flying overhead.
Crows. The crows are usually in big groups like that.
I like to take pictures of them, and I'll go, okay, I think that's that many when I get home. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
And, yeah, same. You can get better at it, but it is something that's a challenge to do, especially, like, the siskins that are just this constant swirl.
Well, and you don't know if they're, you know, when they're just a big flock of little birds and they're way up high, it's you can't say, oh, those are all siskins because they could be...
Right.
Siskins and chickadees and juncos and
red poles show up. So it's a good time for folks to come out and let's see, you guys end up taking all the slack routes, right? If people don't sign up.
If we have any last year, we didn't have hardly anything to do, which was awesome.
Yeah, so encourage people to show up and
feeder counters.
We love feeder counters. Yeah, so if you keep a feeder but don't want to get out necessarily,
or
then,
if you don't have a if you can't get around very well, we have a number of smaller routes that are like downtown routes, or if you're not the greatest birder, but you just want to do a small area and only use like an hour or so of your day, we have smaller routes.
And it's possible to team up with somebody with more experience also. It seems like that's often something you guys try to facilitate.
Yeah, we do.
So, and the goal is to be a census of everything, right? Which is hard, especially since birds move around and stuff. But, and we don't cover everything. But we try to cover at least the same, like, the whole road system at least. Every year.
Yeah, that's
which allows us a good comparison from year to year.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about things that I've seen change since I started doing the Christmas bird count, and we already talked about the Eurasian collared dove, but swans are another thing. When I first moved here and started doing the count, we pretty much never had swans on the count, and now every year the number is growing and growing. I have a feeling this will be our high year.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. I don't remember seeing swans when I was a kid. I mean, not that I was a bird, but swans are not subtle birds, you know?
Yeah.
It's like I remember there being swans put on Swan Lake. You know, there was those black swans for a while, and but I don't, and they weren't there for that long. But I wild swans. I just don't even. I'm sure they flew over, but I didn't notice them. But definitely in the last, I mean, there was. I think I counted 25 out at Stargavin recently.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah,
it's like 20.
Yeah, and I don't know. It makes me wonder if it's like family groups that are just like generations, and they're kind of expanding in numbers, and this is where they winter, or if they've always been kind of in the bays in the area, but just have not been comfortable, and so now a group has said, oh, it actually isn't so bad to be around people because they feed us bread all the time, which is incidentally not what you should be feeding them. Yes,
correct.
Yeah, but corn or something like that, if you really feel compelled to give them food. Although they seem to do all right, they just are eating like they eat the vegetation that's under the water.
Yeah,
but yeah, you can tell when they've started being fed because you go out there and they'll just smell,
make a beeline.
Yeah, they'll swim over. Oh, somebody's been feeding again, so. And actually, one of the interesting birds that I got going at Verstovia was swans, but they were flying over. I think they were going over to like Salmon Lake or something like that.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it is interesting how those things have changed over the years. And then some things are just variable year to year, like the pine siskins. Some year there's
and the red
none.
Poles.
Red poles, some year. Most years it seems like there's none of those, but some years we get a bunch.
Yeah, and boy, it's going to be interesting this year because we haven't had any snow and it hasn't really been that cold. So we'll see what we get. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's always sort of the excitement. So after the count, people are encouraged, not required, but encouraged to come into the Raptor Center later in the day and turn in your sheets and let folks, people are always curious. Oh, did you see any good birds? You know,
mm-hmm. No, Matt is always curious.
I'm not the only one, but yes, I am curious. Did you see any good birds? And we try to be gracious about if you see report something that's, you know, if somebody reports a brown booby, for example, we'll probably be a little skeptical.
And I was just going to say that if you report something that's pretty odd for our area, you're going to get questioned about it. So if you have a camera, bring your camera. A couple of years ago, we saw a gray-crowned rosy finch out the end of the road, and I had my camera. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
I got photos of it. They were blurry photos, but they were photos.
And they were enough to tell that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's always good to have, if you have a camera, bring your camera.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because and sometimes you just don't know what something is. And not always, but a lot of times you can identify a bird from a picture.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, sometimes the ducks are kind of hard to tell apart, or the sparrows are kind of hard to tell apart. And so it's a nice way to just say, well, you know. And it's a good way to learn it too. You know, I looked at this, and then get some help back. So, we'll be doing that in just a couple of weeks, I guess. I guess two weeks from when the show airs. So 2 weeks from Sunday.
Okay.
So, we should wrap up here. Is there anything else you guys want to mention before we go?
Be sure to fill your feeders for the Christmas bird count.
Yeah, we always forget to tell people that.
Yeah, fill the feeders, and then, and you can count the birds in your, and that's a separate sort of category, isn't it? Feeder watch for the count?
Well, it just all goes into
the count.
All goes into the count.
Oh, we didn't mention count week, though.
All right. So count week starts 3 days,
three days before and three days after.
And so birds that are seen during count week but not on the day of the count get included but in their own kind of category.
Right. Yeah. Right. So if we see them on count day, we're counting the species and the number that we see.
Mm-hmm.
If you just see it during count week, it just gets counted as, oh, we saw a western screech owl.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't get a number or anything. It just gets put down as a count week bird.
All right. Great. So if you're, if you're paying attention to the birds during the 3 days before and after, so from the first through the 7th, those birds get, if you see anything unusual then too. And sometimes it's usual things that just nobody happened to see on the day of the
like
count.
A big one is a Steller's Jay.
Steller's Jay, yeah. Yeah, they're not that common.
That one, we don't always see them for the count, but we'll get them like on a count week.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in and talking, and hope folks will show up for the Christmas bird count here in a couple of weeks, and appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to me and also to set it all up for us to do.
You've been listening to a conversation I recorded last week with Jen Cedarleaf and Victoria Vosberg, coordinators of the Christmas bird count this year. And once again, just please feel free to join us on the 1st of January at the Raptor Center. Sign up for a route or just come for the slideshow if you're interested in birds. I'll be doing a slideshow of the birds of Sitka that we're likely to see here. I'll also be doing a slideshow at the library on the 28th of December, next Sunday at 4 p.m. And that I'm going to focus on the yard birds around here. And if you're interested, there's a bird walk at Sitka National Historical Park led by Ryan Carpenter on the 27th. That is Saturday morning at 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Meet at the Visitor Center down there at Totem Park. So some bird activities for this winter season of darkness as we're gaining our light back and looking forward to the new year. As always, you can email me, sitkanature@gmail.com, or get on Facebook and like the Sitka Nature page, or go to sitkanature.org/raven and find links to recordings of past shows. Thanks for joining me. This has been Matt on Sitka Nature Show, KCAW Sitka.